Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're back for part two of the offensive discussion, that big win over the Broncos, 41-10. Joining me to do that is Jordan Coe, one of my very good friends and one of the best people to talk football with. We had a great discussion that first episode, I thought, Jordan, about whether the defense, it's an offensive show, and yet we went down this rabbit hole, no problem, whether the defense should embrace more risk or should do what they did last game, sit back, play a, you know, cover two, embrace the Dean Pease earpiece advice and do that. I thought good points to be made on both sides, and I thought it was a fine discussion all the way around. Lots of other positive stuff about Lamar as well.
Yeah, and I think some of it's situational too. I mean, you know, and we didn't get into this, but I thought it was the right decision to blitz in the Cleveland game. They almost came back and they had an opportunity to potentially score because of it. Obviously, they didn't convert, and, you know, there were other problems in the Cleveland game overall. But I think they make the right decisions. They made the right decisions in those spots of when they needed to do that. And if Eddie Jackson would have bothered to cover his man, then, you know, maybe everything would have been completely different in that game.
I don't even blame him for that one. I blame him for the two that went through his hands. I blame him for not getting a tip drill started on the third one, but the getting beat over the top, that was bound to happen in that situation. And it was set up to force touchdown or incomplete, which is better than 20-yard throw, which would have lost the game right there instead of
exactly
recovery. All right. Well, second half, we do a few things. We talk about the offensive line generally first. We'll talk about some skill position players, and then we'll get out to the mailbag, talk about some MVPs as well. I get my notes together here.
Well, we talked about, you know, with the offensive line in the first, you know, in the first version of this podcast, Cam, where I was kind of like, they were fine. I felt like they were about what you would have expected from kind of the team overall. You know, what was your vibe from the offensive line?
Yeah, not a really good opportunity set provided by the offensive line. And one of the things that made it really not as good, and we talked about this a little bit in the first episode, is that they only threw the ball or got sacked 20 times. 19 passes, one sack. On those 20 plays, they had 15 set blockers and 5 chip blockers. That is an enormous commitment. It's the highest number of the year at 1.00. Enormous commitment of your 5 eligible receivers were made to set and chip blocks. And they still could not provide a good opportunity set for Lamar. Now, it didn't happen to matter because Lamar outthrew his opportunity set by 7.4 yards per pass. 7.4 yards per pass. Okay. Just it's the number still rolls off the tongue. It's just like all of these other offensive numbers is what it is. They had the 2 holding flags. McCary, we'll talk about him in a minute. But I guess it's good that they only allowed only one sack to a team that gets after the quarterback pretty well. I don't think they allowed any additional quarterback hits either. No, they did not. No other quarterback hits by the offensive line anyway. There might have been a quarterback hit that was from an unblocked player that I'm forgetting about, but a good game in terms of not letting Lamar get hammered, which is something they really needed.
Yeah, overall, and I mean, it all starts with Ronnie Stanley. I mean, you know, I think we saw an overall good performance from him. What did you see from Ronnie this week?
Yeah, 48 plays, 42 blocks, 4 missed. He only had 1 negative event. Sorry, he had 2 negative events, 2 shared pressures, which adds up to 1. 0.83 was his raw score. Then with an adjustment, he got up to an A with that. 4 level 2 blocks. Missed his only pull, had a couple highlights. I'll tell you what I really liked about Ronnie Stanley in terms of being a wonderful technician is anytime he's on the backside of a play, run or pass, he has a great notion of how far that play is away from him. That should really help you, by the way. That exact knowledge is what helps offensive linemen avoid holding penalties. But what he does is he'll often block to try and get a hand on 2 different guys, just slow them up a little bit. And they usually can't run down whoever's running to the opposite side. They're out of the play. Whenever I see that, I think that's something really special that Ronnie Stanley gives you. There aren't too many players who even try it. Marshall Yanda did, you know, at one time, but it's usually the backside tackle is often best positioned in order to keep a couple of guys from trailing the play and getting involved late. And that can turn a moderate gain into a huge gain. So an A for Stanley to start it off on the left side. How about you? What did you think about him?
I mean, we've seen consistency from Ronnie Stanley this year, which just goes to tell you that it really was health driven the last couple of years, and that whatever from his conditioning and strength perspective, he has at least gotten back to where he feels like he can trust or be comfortable with what he has and what he's capable of doing. And I think that you're going to see games like this. I think even as he ages a bit and he loses a little bit of whatever he's got, I think as long as this is the kind of consistency you're going to get, you're going to see this week in, week out. He's a smart player. Like you said, he has really good awareness. He's in sync with Lamar. Hard to be unhappy with anything we've seen from Ronnie Stanley this entire year.
Yeah, it's one of the big decisions we talked about in the first show is whether or not they re-sign Ronnie Stanley. I think what's good about the situation is the Ravens are poised, without picking up big contract here at the trade deadline, to have options for next year. If they need to go out and get a player, they can probably do it. They're going to cut a couple of substantial contracts. We'll give them a little bit of cap room. There will be the ability to restructure. Whether or not they really want to pull that trigger and accelerate some of that money will be a question. But they also have a number of third-year players where the divisible benefit is most juicy to both sides to get those deals done early for players like Linderbaum and Likely and Travis Jones. Okay, you also have Owe, who you might want to sign before his fifth-year option kicks in. And that would create probably a contract that's not completely out of this world, but it might be similar to the $14, $15 million a year for 3 years, say, with more back-ending to that contract, which will, again, pull a few more dollars. But the big decision they'll have to make, and the one that will really cost them, is do they want to sign Ronnie Stanley for another multi-year deal? And what would be your optimal solution on there? You mentioned you wanted to sign Stanley. How many years would you try and get him for?
I mean, I don't even know. How old is Ronnie Stanley now?
He's right around 30.
I mean, if you could sign him to something that was like a 4-year deal that was really like a 3-year deal, I think that would be fine in terms of what that looks like. I don't know enough about the left tackle market in terms of what dollars look like overall. But I think, you know, I don't think that he's going to command top of the market money overall. So if you're getting him as the 7th to 12th best tackle in that range in terms of what you're paying him for, I'd be very comfortable with whatever that average, without knowing what that number is, be very comfortable with that number over 4 years. It's backloaded to really get out of that in three.
I guess I'll throw a number out there. It might be something like 22 to 24 million if we're talking about in that range of left tackles. It's definitely a big commitment. If you fail on that bet, you lose a lot. But again, that gives them the option value of having the rest of the season look at Rosengarten, see if he's ready to go move to left tackle, or see if he needs to really play at right tackle to maintain his effectiveness. But they'll have the option, and they'll be able to get, I think, two good deals done, and maybe three if they really work at it. And then they're probably going to have a player that ends up out of the third year group in not being somebody they could retain after four. And then, of course, after next year, they've got the Hamilton deal. And so they've got to save money to try and lock him up, because I don't think there's anyone who wants to see him go into the Hall of Fame as anything but a Raven.
I think the bigger question is about whether or not the Ravens are aggressive and get it done quickly, or if they let him test the market and let other teams come after Ronnie. I think that's really the question of, do you try and lock this up now? Do we not want to play games around this? Let's say we can set this now at 19 for three, but it's almost like, we won't call it fully guaranteed, but it's a lot more guaranteed over 3 years. We just signed the deal and we get it done. Or do we let you test the market, drive up the average value of what that contract looks like? We kind of put all kinds of BS in there in terms of like what you're really looking at when you're not looking at, right? Like, think Patrick Queen, right? Where you thought that deal was really pro Patrick Queen, but ultimately that deal was really pro Steelers if you dig in, if you look into it, right? And so maybe he can drive a higher AAV, right? But if he does that, what's he trading off for? I think that's the question that faces the Ravens. Are we willing to make some kind of sacrifice around that early to get him off the market and to really wrap up and just do what we need to do? Or do we like our other left tackle options, either in-house or on the rest of the market at those dollars? I mean, I'm sure that the Ravens are trying to figure that out now. They have some sense of what the market looks like now. That's what you need to get. That ultimately is the big question to me.
With eight games remaining in the season, plus as many as four playoff games, let's call it 11 games that the Ravens might have left if the season goes fairly optimally from this point. The Ravens are in a position where each of those games gives them more value of the option is converted, but also more divisible benefit is taken off the table. So each game will tell them more about what Roger Rosengarten can do, whether he can move to left tackle. Each team tells them more about whether or not Ronnie's actually going to be healthy next year, and they want to do this. I mean, there's certainly, if he can play through this season, get to the end of the year and be healthy, I mean, everybody is going to want him. So it's a matter of, at what point do you do it? I don't think there's a big hometown discount coming for Ronnie Stanley, and maybe it's just not reasonable that there would be. $85 million for 4 years, $88 million for 4 years, something like that seems like a really good to reasonable number. I think that would be enough to put him in the Ring of Honor here, which is also just a nice little side benefit that maybe he'd appreciate.
I would sign up for that today. Like, as of today, I would sign up for that.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I think that the maximum of what his market might get to is something that looks like 4-100. As we're kind of talking about where those numbers lie, that's probably a little too much, but at some point you got to make some kind of investment on the offensive line. Is that Linderbaum? Is that Stanley? Where do you want to see some of that kind of stuff fit in? It's probably, like you said, the interesting question, for the Ravens as they head into the offseason. But, the left guard spot is just as much of a question mark, I think, as we look at what it looks like headed into next year, right? Because we've got Makari is, and we can talk specifically about Makari before he's at least early wasn't the answer. Obviously played really high, didn't seem to kind of quite have the awareness that you might want, really was trying to play from his upper body strength instead of learning to utilize his lower body strength. Can that change? Do you trust him? What does that look like? But I mean, a big question of that is, you want Patrick Makari to stay for you at left guard?
Yeah, that is the real question, because he's a free agent, and they'll have to decide whether or not there's another contract in his future with the Ravens. Something tells me he's more valuable to the Ravens than he is to, all but maybe six other NFL teams who really understand how to use a versatile player like that. But I don't know that means the Ravens get him. I think there could be some other team that overpays for him. And with every additional game he puts up at guard that it's at a good level, it gets more difficult too. You're taking away, the likelihood that he'll be back. Let me go through Makari.
Well, PFF, really quick. Yeah, PFF loved him this game. What did you think about him?
I didn't love as much. And the difference between PFF and me is going to be the holding penalties. They have an absurdly small waiting for the holding penalties that they say it's no big deal. And I say, no, it's a very big deal. That's a one-man-only decision on a declinable penalty, which is a big deal. By the way, there's a big McCary stat this year. McCary's had 7 penalties. 5 of them this year have been offensive holdings. 0 of the 5 have stalled drives. So that means they've gotten out of every one of those 1st and 20, 2nd and 20 kind of situations with Lamar just, you know, picking it up however he did.
Well, one of them converted into a 2nd and 12 this past week. So it wasn't because the hole was on a screen, so it was down the field.
That's right.
It was down
the
field. It wasn't quite as debilitating from that perspective. But anyway,
that's a good point. So making your penalty down the field if you can is good. By the way, that was a problem about McCary in this game. Did he have every hold? Maybe not. Did he have more than 2 holds in this game? I think the answer is yes. Like, he was out in space and he was hooking people and doing all this funny stuff. And he's pulling his hands off quickly in the most guilty kind of a move you can make. But anyway, real quickly through his scoring, 53 plays, 45 blocks. He missed 6 and had half a pressure allowed. So if it was just there, he'd have finished with a very nice score, probably an A. And I have to look at that real quickly. But he lost 10 points on penalties. So he would have had 44 out of 53. Otherwise, I'm just going to do that real quickly here just to see what that would have worked at. Now, actually, it would have had 45 out of 53 because he lost an additional point. That would have been 0.85. He would have been right on the border. He would have been 0.89. He would have been a B-plus game without this. So he got a D with it. Unfortunate, 7 blocks in level 2. The whole team, McCary being one of them, is getting out very well in front of screen passes right now, which is a beautiful thing to see. Ravens have never done this well. Never. And the entire team is out there like a white picket fence in front of Justice Hill whenever he gets the football. And it's been beautiful to see. I almost think Mitchell may not have the patience to run behind that, but we'll see. You know, if he's that guy. 6 out of 7 on pulls for McCary. Now, that's a little misleading because he had a holding penalty on a pull as well. So it really doesn't give you the points. It's probably more like, you know, 1 point out of 7 or 2 points out of 8 or some such. But it wasn't a great performance on pulling. But the 6 out of 7 is still, I take that as some good evidence that the Ravens might be getting back to having pulls that have worked. A lot of their pulling from left guard this year just not worked. And the Ravens in the Del Sandres era were always a team that could train any non-mobile athlete to be a good puller from left guard.
Yeah, you know, my big question about left guard and this offensive line in general is they feel, you mentioned this when you were talking about it, they feel hookier or handsier or holdier than normal, than past years, right? And I think some of that is the zone, more of the zone running scheme. So you're running laterally. You do have your arms out in front of you. You are trying to utilize kind of length in that regard. And so some of it feels like, yeah, like some of this has been ticky-tacky. There have been a couple holds on Linderbaum that I thought haven't been holds. But like, I think some of that builds up over the course of the game where refs are seeing you do things that are like holding in other circumstances. And then maybe they didn't call it on that one, but it like that one was close enough. And like, you got to stop doing that. Right. Because like this is their way of enforcing that. And it's not a makeup call per se, but if the Ravens are being handsier, it's going to lead to like some bad holding calls in some of those circumstances. I think, I don't know. What's your take?
I completely agree. And the referees do use a warning system with players to say, hey, you do that again, it's going to be a penalty. And I'm like, why isn't it a penalty the first time? It's a penalty. It's a penalty.
It's
I mean, that first drive of the year where we saw those, you know, 30 million in illegal formation penalties called on Ronnie and McCary for one of them. It was just an example of, you know, not giving any slack. There was no, you know, the information was not being communicated properly in terms of what was going on. Anyway, that's it for McCary. D for McCary in this game. I know PFF has him higher. That's a difference in the grading systems. And we can talk about whether I'm right or they're right another time.
Well, I thought Linderbaum played a particularly good game, kind of working our way down the line here. What did you see from him?
A very, very solid game. He did have 2 half penetrations. So if anything, it was kind of run blocking he let down. And he'd been having some trouble with pass blocking recently as well. 3 missed blocks. That's fine. And two half penetrations. So those are part of two plays that led to run losses. Still 0.85 overall with adjustment of B. Center's a little tougher grading scale there than it is a tackle. And that's why the, you know, Stanley and Hebo finished with a 0.88 adjusted score, but it's an A for Stanley. It's a B for Linderbaum because of the difference between tackle and center. Six level two blocks, three pancakes, two out of three on pulls and two highlights. So he's really a score sheet stuffer in terms of those other types of blocks that I count, the level twos, the PCs. He doesn't usually get as many PCs. He's getting guys to the ground this game. Always has been pretty good on pulls, and he generates a lot more highlights than other linemen because he makes a lot of combination blocks, where he makes a first block to tee somebody up the line of scrimmage and then blocks somebody in level two. And that's the most common type of highlight block I assign. So another good game for Linderbaum here.
Yeah, and I think we're just going to continue to see steady performance from him. Do you feel like you see Linderbaum asked to do more than other centers are asked to do? You know, I think that we've seen in the past, you know, especially when Makari was in there and the Ravens have had some ugly center situations historically, there's been way more help given to the center. Is that the case where Linderbaum has seen less of that assignment and asked to do a little bit more than you might expect?
It's an interesting question because obviously the Ravens do run a lot of their offense out of the shotgun, even now when they're increasing their under center a little bit more. They still do a lot of shotgun. That increases the snap load, and he's had some problems with that. You know, he snapped one ball into his foot. He snapped another ball last year into the end zone against the Rams. I think he's had three in the last 2 years that I've counted as sacks because they're bad snaps that led to big negative plays, and they had to be assigned, you know, reasonably from a scoring perspective, and that's how I did each of them. And then you see something like PFF say he's got zero sacks in the last however many games it is now. And I think, wait a minute, what about those plays?
Okay. Yeah, what by the way, safety.
by the way, PFF is fantastic. And their underlying scoring for those plays would match up pretty much exactly with what I've got. The problem is that their integer scoring for the pressure events doesn't allow them to work with fine tools. So they can't award half a pressure. They only have to award a zero or a one on every play. I can award a third, a sixth, whatever I think is reasonable to divide that pressure up among its constituents, contributors, I should say. So anyway, it is what it is. A very good game for Linderbaum, though. We take that for the rest of the year.
Well, and then, we got up next to our favorite whipping boy, or yep. It feels like what it always seems to be. And he's getting less attention, so that has to mean something positive that we've been seeing from Filele. I mean, he certainly hasn't been a turnstile like we saw early in the year. There's been progression from him. But is it really that much better?
A big up and down play for the whole year. And I want to bring up my offensive line scoring by game here so I can just talk about this briefly. But he's had a D and an F the last two games. He came back and had a C in this one, which obviously is a big step forward. Anytime, frankly, Fa'alele gets a C at this point, even though he's a third year player, and you know, you got to start converting on some of this. Potential energy and turning into kinetic energy. It hasn't worked out. And he's been playing whack-a-mole with his various weaknesses. And this time his weaknesses was back to being missed blocks. He had nine of those in this game. Very indecisive moving to level two. And even though he had a lot of level two blocks in this game, he had eight level two blocks, which that's a very positive sign for them. He had a lot of other times he moved to level two and just couldn't find anybody or gave up on finding somebody. And then he has other plays. He's in on a screen pass. He'll just keep running down the field forever looking for somebody, and he never finds anybody. Literally, he'll run out the screen, and then the receiver will run him back into the screen, and he still hasn't found anybody. it's kind of funny to watch. But anyway, only allowed one pressure as a pass blocker this game, so that was good. 41 points, 0.77 per play. Works out to be a C after adjustment. Three pancakes in the game. That was good, by the way. His pancakes, he got more physical in terms of finishing in this game. That was a step forward and something, you know, you look for the little pluses in terms of a player like Fa'alele in terms of how he's stepping forward, but that was one. Also made a block on all four of his pulls. He's been having a lot of problems getting through. He's a big body, obviously, but he has a lot of problems avoiding the feet of the players around him, which can be a footwork issue for him. It can be a footwork issue for the players around him. It could be a penetration issue from big players against a player like Linderbaum, who you know, may have to go backwards and trip up our guy Fa'alele. But he did pretty good on his pulls in this game. Had two highlights. I'd sign up for that for the rest of the year right now if we could get it. Don't know if that's I know nobody's offering that contract. because there might be other valuable considerations involved if there were. And I'm hanging on to my soul for now by a thread.
Well, it's good to see the pancakes. I mean, I think that the bigger question will come in some of these divisional games where he's going to get targeted a lot more just from teams knowing and being knowledgeable about the Ravens.
Contempt. The intersection of familiarity and contempt. Yes.
So I think we're going to start to see maybe a little bit more of that. So we're in a nice little stretch here where between Denver, who was playing really well on defense, Cincinnati and Pittsburgh being familiar foes, as to whether or not we continue to hold up and see good numbers from him. I mean, the one nice thing about Falele in the broader picture of all this is that he is a guy that has there is room for growth. Mm-hmm. And whether or not he captures that is up to him. But we are seeing progression in some places. I mean, like one pressure is great to see, you know, and if he can find work better as he continues to progress for a guy that didn't play a lot of football, that seems like a thing that you could learn and a thing that could be coached, and watching enough film over enough time could maybe help him get there.
I'm all for that. It's just the Ravens don't have forever. You know, next year, after next year, Falele is a free agent. And if you really want to get extreme with 11 games maybe left, including the playoffs, could Falele be a guy you sign early? Because there's a guy who has a ton of divisible benefit on the table if you really thought you were going to get a cheap deal. If you want to sign him for, let's toss a number out there. And I don't know if his agent would allow this, but what if, I mean, he's a fourth round draft pick. He hasn't really made any money to date in his career. He's not going to make any money in his fourth season either way. If they signed a 3-year extension, which should keep him in Baltimore for years 5, 6, and 7 for, let's toss a number out there, $12 million total. Would you sign that right now? Would you get him on board for that, buying into the upside of what the Ravens obviously believe in here, and the hope that you know, he will get a little better from where he is now?
I mean, today I wouldn't go higher than 8.5.
8.5 for 3 years, okay.
Yeah, but maybe by the end of the year. I mean, this is again the case where you get a little bit of time to make some decisions around this kind of stuff and decide about what it needs to be. We can continue to see a mean streak in him. We can see kind of the ability to find blockers at the second level, and continue to improve in those places and spaces. I mean, his size is a thing that you cannot take away from him. And it's an asset, regardless of what you want to think about it. It's an asset for any player to be of his stature. Yeah. And so there is upside in that. You know, I don't think you're ever going to kick him out again to tackle. I wouldn't want to see that.
Yeah, I think that's over.
But yeah, I mean, for the right number, I could live with that.
So here's, I know you know this, by the way, but Falele only being around for 2.5 years, they can't sign him now. They don't have, can't sign him till the end of the third year. So they have to wait till this offseason at the earliest to do it. But that doesn't mean they can't be ready here's what the right number is. And you're saying 8.5 based on what you know right now. I think I'd be higher. I think I've seen enough little positive things from him in various games, even though the aggregate score is not particularly great. Looks like he's got about a C minus for the whole year right now. It's not ideal for a third year player, but there's still some growth. And I think I'd go. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions, and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them. Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
He hasn't been a big penalty machine like Simpson has been. He's had three holding calls and one looks like an illegal man downfield. Maybe I have to take that back. That's not good. But well, we'll think about it. It's obviously something that's on the table for the Ravens. I'll move over to right tackle and talk a little bit about Roger Rosengarten here. 53 plays, 42 blocks, 5 missed. He was the one guy who gave up a bunch of pressure and penetration events. He gave up a third of a penetration. He gave up 2 plus 2.5 pressures, and he gave up 2/3 of 1 sack. I gave a third of that sack to Mark Andrews, who basically got beat on the other side and phone boothed the pocket, so there was no escape. So it worked out to be 0.59 before adjustment, 0.64 after, which is in the D range. 4 level 2 blocks, 1 pancake, 2 more highlights for him. I can't, you know, call this turd chocolate ice cream anyway. I look at it, it's a poor game, and he hasn't had too many poor games this year. So looking at Rosengarten right now, his grades when he's played have been B, C plus, D, B, C, D. So solid C average even with this D. He was about a C plus before this. He's still within range, within the range of outcomes are ones where I say, hey, let's give this guy a chance at left tackle in 2025. And this guy's got to stay at right guard in 2025. And oh my God, I'm not sure we want him on the roster anymore. That they won't go that far, but they might be. We definitely need to draft a tackle, even if we sign Stanley, would be the third group that it could fall into.
Well, my big question is, have we seen it, how much of that injury that we saw from Rosengarten is appearing on film to you? Does it seem like he's fine and moving fine overall? Or do you think that that's still lingering from, what was that, 4 weeks ago when he missed a handful of snaps, came off the field, came back, came off the field?
As far as injuries, I'm aware that he's been dealing with this shoulder thing because he's wearing a harness the whole year. And I'm trying to remember, did he have an ankle or something? What was?
Yeah, it was an ankle injury in the Bengals game.
In the Bengals game.
And he missed, I want to say he missed 10 snaps in that game.
His play has probably been a little bit worse since then, but not dramatically so. He's, you know, the Cincinnati game, he had a C+, and since then he's been D, B, C, D. So, you know, C- probably average since then. I can't say that I have really noticed. I mean, there's a general, not tremendous quickness, in terms of the game is just moving a little faster than it did at the college level, whereas Mirror was more than adequate. And there's been a problem with his anchor in general. He's getting pushed back into the cone too often. So, you know, what the Ravens could really use on the right side, particularly if they had a player like Rosengarten on the left side, would be a great 12-6 blocker who is a monolithic kind of right tackle. So what Falele could have been, what Orlando Brown was really valuable over there, a guy who could block people south of the pocket with some frequency.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Rosengarten, I mean, I think he's a big key to where this offensive line ultimately ends up going.
Yep, absolutely. And we, you know, one thing, we're getting so caught up in the incredible performance of every skill position player. 5/11 of this offense is this offensive line, and that's the part that's letting the team down a little bit. So they're not terrible, but they're not elite either. They're just doing, they're okay. They're the tofu in this offense. The all the flavoring is the skill position players. All right. Let's move on and talk about some individual players. You're the guest. Who would you like to talk about first?
Let's talk about Derrick Henry, because we've talked about some of these other guys. I mean, Derrick Henry is just Derrick Henry. I mean, if you told me that he was 26 or told me he was 24 right now, I would believe you. Like, you know, from what you see on tape, you know, we've seen, I mentioned Mark Ingram being a guy that fell off the table in terms of what the performance that you saw, you know, at some point. That does not look like it's what is coming from Derrick Henry. There are after every single one of these games, I feel like his comment has been, I've left yards on the field and I got to go get them. Mm-hmm. With dogged determination. I really wanted the Ravens to sign him, and he's a guy that I wanted here. Obviously that's paid off. The Ravens, and I think that it could have been Barkley. It could have been a lot of different guys. It didn't need to be Derrick Henry. But the Ravens have missed elite running back talent since J.K. Dobbins got hurt. And it just goes to show you the impact that what happens when they have that.
Yeah, it's certainly been very exciting. I didn't think it was I was lukewarm on the move. Let's put it that way. When it happened, my co-host on Friday Morning GM and I were both kind of negative on the move, Voss. And about all I'll say is, you know, a healthy Henry is almost always going to be worth it. He's gonna produce for you in a way that you're gonna be very happy with, and the Lamar lifts all ships component of Henry has really paid off. So he'd had a 46% success rate with Tennessee. He got keyed on a lot. His success rate was low, but also his average point at which he was contacted was about a yard closer, or half a yard or yard, one or the other. It doesn't really matter which it is because they're both extreme. Closer to the line of scrimmage than say I think Gus Edwards was last year. And we've seen this year, he's had tremendous yards before contact that have really paid off for the Ravens. And by the way, some of that's the offensive line getting him the first few yards into level two. A lot of it's Henry outrunning defenses in level two as he gets it, like in the long run against Buffalo. You don't run up 87 yards before contact that it inflates your stat for the entire year without having a lot of speed. So been a very exciting player to have. And it's been a lot of fun. Dab as a player, looks like he's having a tremendous amount of fun. Looks like he should be a good leader the way he approaches things. I don't have a single bad thing to say about the thing. He's just an extraordinary athlete in his late career for his position. And like Nolan Ryan into his 40s could still throw the fastball in the mid to high 90s. He can still do all the things you're supposed to do as a running back at 30. And that's just very rare. I have to pick a player. Now let's go on. Let's talk about Tez Walker just briefly here. Obviously, you know, he is the big loser in the Deontay Johnson trade. And I was even surprised that he was active here. I think he's a candidate to go to IR when the Ravens need the roster spot. I thought they might if they'd made a trade, would have had to IR Walker, and they have some other options too, but Walker or safety maybe are both guys. Seems like now the last 2 weeks, he's kind of picked up a bigger share of special teams, which is nice. And he's also got his first four snaps as a wide receiver. Still didn't get a target. You know, it was all, he was all in there when Johnson was in the game. So they weren't even considering throwing the ball. By the way, I did want to throw this at you now. So they've had three games this year that have been like the sandwich, a doo-doo sandwich pretty much of what they did. The first game against Buffalo, they get to a 35-10 point in the game, and both coaches signal it to each other in no uncertain way that they want to get this game over with as quickly as possible. They run the last 7-17, I think it was, in only 11 plays. So both teams are running the ball and just try to drain the clock. I felt like we had this again in this game. And then in between, we got that miserable Tampa Bay game where Todd Bowles, you know, deludes himself into thinking his team still has a chance, and Mayfield goes along with it. And then they, not only did they get Godwin hurt, but on the last play of the game, as time runs out, Mayfield doesn't even slide as he's running the ball 12 yards. Adult supervision is needed, you know, to play this game adequately. And I'm really glad what Harbaugh did in both this game and the Buffalo game, being able to signal that to the opposing coach and being able to get the game over with in a hurry was very nice to see.
Yeah, you would think that you would think everybody would want to see that, right? You know, you're playing for the next week at that point. I mean, like, and it's not like you're undefeated like the Chiefs are, or like the Patriots were when they were like in deep in their undefeated run. There's no value in that for anybody. I think overall.
Who's your next player?
I will take, we'll take Isaiah Likely just briefly as well. Why is he on the kick return coverage team? what is the point of that? That's really my big question, right? Like, he's obviously, when needed, can be a really critical part of this offense, is a guy when mismatched that Lamar will look to regularly. What are you guys thinking?
Well, I'm if he becomes the number one tight end, I think that'll change for starters. But they do have a limited number of total special teams players, and they probably already are carrying too many on a game-to-game basis. Last year, the big injury that happened on special teams was Marlon Humphrey getting hurt on a field goal block attempt.
Yeah.
So we just have to hope that, you know, they can do what they need to with other players. But you always have to put somebody at risk on those plays. In terms of kick coverage, one of the big things is just put the ball in the end zone regularly. They did it all but two times in this game, but the Broncos also ran two balls out of the end zone, which I'm like, hell, really? Do you have to be doing that each time? Even though there's potentially a gain there for the Ravens if they do that. It didn't seem like it was a good thing for the Ravens for that to occur. So, and I don't know exactly which play Likely was hurt on. So it's possible it's one of those.
Yeah, I just want to see him. He can when needed. I think he's gonna. And he was in the Kansas City game, a really huge part of that game. Teams are going to try and let him be the guy that beats them at some point. And, you know, the Ravens need him available to do that.
All right. I go on. I'll talk about Rashad Bateman. I think, you know, there's a lot. We've already said a lot about Flowers. He said less about Bateman. Bateman, you know, kind of stepped back in this game. He's had three drops in the last two games, which is not good. He's still averaging over 10 yards a target, which is extremely good. He was leading the NFL in yards per target 2 weeks ago. I don't know if you heard me say that on the pod, but just, you know, what bizarro world do we live in that Bateman is leading the league? And so I looked at it then and said, this contract is one of the greatest contracts in the NFL right now. If you're going to trade wide receivers and wonder who has the most trade value among all wide receivers in the NFL, Bateman be right there. I mean, he's got 3 years on a super cheap contract. Flowers would be right there too, of course, because he's got 2.5 years, same as Bateman does, left on his rookie deal. But I'd say if you're excluding rookies, Bateman would be one of the great trade chips in the NFL. I'm not saying trade him, by the way. I am not saying that at all. He's too good. But it's a marvelous contract. And the fact the Ravens have this is almost like a mini quarterback on a first contract deal, that they have an ex receiver on a contract like this for three, you know, for this year and two more. That can really help them build around that as long as Bateman can keep up what he's doing. It looks like the connection is there now.
Yeah, he just needs to catch the dang ball. You know, I mean, the Cleveland one, I think, was more egregious than this one. This one was Lamar in motion. It wasn't clear whether he needed a block or run. I think Lamar saw a window to throw on the ball, and so he decided to throw it. And it's very possible that if Lamar was fully healthy, that he would have run there instead of throwing the ball there. And so I don't put the second drop on Bateman as much. The first one was, I mean, it lost them the game. There's no other way to put it than to say that the drop in the Cleveland game will cost them the game. It was an ample time and space play. Lamar played it perfectly. He was wide open and the ball hit him in the fucking head. Clean that up. And exactly. And he's going to continue to get deep looks over the middle in split safety opportunities like that. He needs to be able to catch that ball, and he needs Lamar to trust him to catch that ball.
Right. And there was an issue with the sun there. And I some other people I know were saying that the sun is, you know, shouldn't be a problem, but Bateman is now wearing a prescription visor tinted visor now. So good change there. You know, a couple games too late, or
if one game too late. Whatever he needs to do to help in those situations. I mean, obviously, I think that he wants to be better. I think he can be better. It's just one of those situations where, especially in those critical moments, the Ravens, you saw what DeAndre Hopkins did last night for the Chiefs, where he's catching the ball in the middle of three guys, right? You know, yep. And I'm not saying that Bateman is as good as DeAndre Hopkins was in his prime, but I think that Bateman is as good of, if not a better receiver than DeAndre Hopkins overall right now.
Right now.
And so he's got to make those, mm-hmm. he's got to make those catches if that's the case.
Yeah, completely agree.
So I'll take Mark Andrews next, who is an interesting guy because I do think that he wasn't healthy in the first third of this year. And he was still recovering and, you know, the car accident and all of that. I think the best is still yet to come for Mark Andrews. And I think that as teams continue to rotate through and pivot what they're doing on defense, Zay Flowers is going to start to see more and more attention. And as that happens, Mark Andrews is going to see less and less attention. And the less attention Mark Andrews gets, the more that Lamar Jackson loves to throw him the ball. And so we've seen him drop a couple this year as well. We need to see that cleaned up. You know, the one interception that Lamar had, I put squarely on Andrews. I think that's a ball that he needs to catch in that situation. But I think that we're seeing the explosiveness is there. The catchability is there. I don't think there's any drop off in Andrews' play overall. And so it's just an opportunity set right now. And I think that there's opportunity to come.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, he had two targets, 32 yards. He got open. Lamar found him. That was great. Didn't, you know, playing 49% of the snaps, that number is going to go up with likely out. I do assume at this point that with likely missing a couple of days of practice effectively, that he's not going to be playing against Cincinnati, and it's going to be primarily a shift to more Andrews and more Kolar. And we'll see how it otherwise works out if they elevate another heavy, or if they just go with the three, including Ricard. But my guess is just going to be a heavier reliance on those three guys. It'll be interesting to see how they do it. And Andrews, I think, is up to it right now. You also make a good point about the injuries. Those injuries, nothing has to do with last year's injury. Last year's injury, he was over with. He was looking great in camp, running around, jumping all over the place for the football. Connection with Lamar was all there. There wasn't any hint of an injury in camp until late in camp. He had the car accident, rolled his car. And apparently that day, the day before, he'd also left practice early with some sort of other injury. Might have been a knee that had also kept him out for a little bit. So, and that kept him out of practice for a little bit as well. So it ended up, I think you're exactly correct. For the first four or five games of the year, he probably wasn't completely feeling himself, and he should be ready to go right now because the Ravens really need him. All right. I talk about Justice Hill before I call it here on this, because I don't think we talked about him. Hill is doing everything. I mean, the wheel route was another great thing. And Lamar does not make a whole lot of drop it in the bucket type throws, not the fade lobby, high lobby throws that get tossed in there. But he's got a great connection with Hill on the wheel route with two of them this year, one to the right, one to the left. They both look great. Hill's making unbelievable yardage conversion on his opportunities where the pass starts behind the line of scrimmage or near it on these screen passes. The Ravens have never had anybody any better, including Ray Rice, at running on screen passes and than Hill has been this year. I thought the re-signing of him, I think the Ravens will not regret that deal. You know, they could if he gets hurt. Of course, it always is possible, but it already looks like a good deal from my perspective.
Yeah, the depth on these kind of deals at that kind of level make all the difference in the world. And especially when it comes down to it. I mean, you think about part of what was really, I mean, the Ravens offense for what it was built to be when it got to the end of the year last year with Andrews hurt was not kind of like at full octane. Obviously, Andrews was not fully healthy in that game. We're still giving him sats, Keaton Mitchell, et cetera. So you need guys that can step up and have something in it that are going to be able to be contributing to what they're going to get from it. And so, you know, at the end of the day, Justice Hill, he's really shown his ability to be a guy that deserves the spot on this team and not be, you know, even with Edwards and Dobbins down the stretch, they just couldn't stay healthy. Even if you were looking at them to be some kind of role player in the mix of all of that, it's really been nice to see Hill's progression.
Yeah. All right, let's look at the mailbag. We have a few questions in there. I want to make sure we get the offensive questions taken care of. If you can head over to Twitter and bring up hashtag film study mailbag, that's where you can submit all your questions or comments. We got Keith Downey says he did look inaccurate at times. I think he must be talking about Lamar here, right? No, Nix, Bo Nix he's talking about. He did look inaccurate at times.
I was going to say, okay. Not the Lamar I saw.
That's a good comment. Should have been left for the defensive show, and apologize for not getting it to it. Let's see. Another defensive question here. I think we're okay to answer this one since the defense has passed for the week. This is from Josh Stevens. He says, do you think we could move him to free safety to try to use more of his ball hawking ability? He's talking about Tre'Davious White acquired today. To use more of his ball hawking ability, or would you keep him at corner and just use him more in zone plays? Let me try and give an answer to the second part of that first. I don't think it's easy to use a corner only on zone snaps. It's true. You probably can use him when you're ahead in a game and you want to have people, you want to keep the play in front of you, and then he's going to be of more value doing that. So maybe you could do it that way. But the easiest way to make sure the guy's looking at the quarterback and trying to read him is to put him at safety. So how do you feel about it? Do you think Tre'Davious White, the Ravens are better served in 2024, keeping him a corner or trying to do some sort of in-season conversion?
I don't think an in-season conversion would make a ton of sense. And, you know, I think the only – you've got to find out what he's got at corner before you decide to move him to safety. I mean, I guess if you see another injury – I think we talked about this earlier. I trust Wiggins, Mollett, and Humphrey to be your primary corners. And if you're comfortable with that, then maybe you can take a look. But Tre'Davious White can be a really good corner. And if that's what he's going to give to you, then you let him play corner.
Okay. All right, we got one we didn't get to yesterday on the defensive show. I know that I missed. So Kid Rock 20 asked, why dress a guy you're not going to play, similar to Marcus Williams last week? He's referring to Travis Jones being active as the fifth defensive lineman in this game.
I mean, I think that's just emergency. You know, they didn't want to play him if they didn't have to. So, yep. You know, I know you love your extra active defensive lineman, Ken. So there he was.
Yeah, and that's like dressing 4.1 defensive lineman. You're not really dressing five. But I agree with you entirely. It was just for emergency usage, break glass in case of emergency. And fortunately, they didn't get put in that position, winning the game by 31. So, yeah, I dislike the Marcus Williams one more the week before. It's nice to see Marcus come back and make a good play right off the bat. He did get beat for a touchdown. It wasn't a terrible play, but, you know, it's set of data points kind of stuff with Marcus Williams. You got to hope that he's going to make a few plays on the football. And it did not happen in his first week back yet. It did happen, though, for Ardarius on the very next play. So it's nice to see a good play from each safety there.
Yeah, I don't think that you can blame Marcus Williams for that. I mean, that touchdown sequence to Nix was the perfect sequence of exactly what had to happen in that instance. They drew the defense in. It was a perfect throw from Sutton. It was a contested catch that Nix had to make. I mean, it was surprising to see a quarterback be able to make that play, but everything had to go right on that play for Denver, right. and everything did go right. That seems like a microcosm to some degree of the Ravens season, that some of these plays are just like the only way that could happen is if all this went right and all of it went right. So I don't put that one on him as much, but I agree that when your drop off for the guy that's replacing the person that you're not letting play is as far as it is from Marcus Williams, a healthy Marcus Williams to Eddie Jackson. It's not worth it. But sometimes you got to make a statement. And, you know, ultimately, maybe it made a difference in terms of Ardarius Washington making the interception, the tone of what happened in practice the next week. All of those things matter, too. And so, you know, it's hard to, without being in the huddle or being in the being at the castle to understand what's kind of happening with that kind of stuff, it's really hard to be critical of it.
In the case of Williams, there isn't anybody else to play free safety. So they were going back to him, and it was just clearly, you know, now that we've seen it, it's very clear it was intended as a punitive, get your head right, 1 week punishment, all kept in house, optionality of the situation, totally kept in Harbaugh's hands. Very, very positive from that standpoint, how it was handled. In the case of Eddie Jackson, there's not even any bones about it. Eddie Jackson is now ready to go again this next week. He was, in fact, a healthy scratch for this game. And not activated and sidelined. He's a healthy scratch, not playing, you know, not on the team, not on the field in any way. And now Ardarius Washington basically just won his job. And he had two targets. He knocked one down, stripped the guy of one, and he intercepted the other. And he made a great tackle at the goal line to stop a touchdown. It's just he doesn't have a job anymore. He's Wally Pipp. Without the quality of play that Wally Pipp once had. So it's a tough situation for him. But, you know, Eddie Jackson is also one of the players. If the Ravens acquired a safety or they moved Tre'Davious White successfully to safety, I think Eddie Jackson's one of the players who would be on the waiver wire pretty quickly. MVPs for this game. You want to go 3-2-1 on this? I'm not sure we've got a whole lot of difference, but go ahead and start us off. Who's your number three guy for the game?
Number three, I think I'd say is Derrick Henry.
Okay. I have the same guy, and I suspect we're going to have the same guy for all three. So let's just do it kind of quickly. What's your number two?
I've got Henry, Flowers, and Jackson.
There you go. Okay. So there's no doubt about it this week. Even though I love what Justice Hill has done with the football, I can't give him a surprise MVP. The only guy who I thought maybe deserved to be in that group, and then I couldn't really do it in the end, is Ronnie Stanley, who had the best game on the offensive line. But otherwise, I can't really do it. By the way, was Ronnie's best game of this season, which is nice. He hadn't really had a game that was quite at a top shelf game yet, even though he's overall been very good. It's been a case of usually being a little bit good each week. So in the old PFF, they show you all the underlying numbers. He's probably gotten like a plus two every week to add up to a pretty significant positive number for the year. But now they don't show you those numbers. They don't let you look under the hood anymore on that. Anyway, Jordan, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tell folks where they can find you online.
Yeah, on Twitter at Raven Sit Room. Love to chat Ravens football there with you.
All right. Other folks out there, if you want to do a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. If you want to do something nice for the show, a 50-word, 5-star review is always valued. Otherwise, like and subscribe. And we hope you'll continue listening on a regular basis. Jordan, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them. Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.